Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, November 21st, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll hear from Jeff Brown and Annie Bartholomew about this weekend's media sale and pop-up record store. Sharon Gateman and Sarah Truitt will highlight the King Island Christmas production. The Canvas will tell us about what they'll be offering at Public Market. And Kaylin Hasland will preview the next edition of Tidal Echoes and remind us of its submission deadline. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon, currently 24 degrees at the Juno Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Native organization says many people opposing the Dakota Access Pipeline were injured by police tactics in North Dakota on Sunday. Videos live-streamed on social media showed the clash between hundreds of people and law enforcement on a bridge, which was closed off by police a few weeks ago. According to the organization Honor the Earth, people were injured when law enforcement blasted water cannons in freezing temperatures. Tear gas, LRAD, and rubber bullets were also reported to have been used on people. The Morton County Sheriff's Department called Sunday's action a riot, which officers used less than lethal means. Those on the bridge say they were trying to clear the road from debris, which is obstructing the highway, and say it threatens lives because emergency services have been unable to travel quickly through the area. It has restricted movement of local residents and cut off travel to and from the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's casino. The Morton County Sheriff's Department says the bridge was closed in late October due to damage caused after a protest on the bridge and to prevent trespassing on nearby land. Meanwhile, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe has continually called for peace. Some tribal leaders in the U.S. are expressing concern following the recent election of Donald Trump for president. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, they worry some of Trump's plans for his first 100 days in office could negatively impact Indian country.
Trump has vowed deep federal spending cuts after he takes the oath of office in January. But some tribal leaders say that could threaten education, housing, health care, and family service programs that benefit Native Americans. Some of those are protected under federal treaties. Winona Benally is the Democratic representative-elect for Arizona's 7th Legislative District, which includes the Hopi Tribe and the Navajo Nation.
When you start to see massive cuts across the board to these types of programs, well, that is equivalent to ending the federal trust responsibility with Indian tribes.
Trump has also promised to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act in his first 100 days. The ACA renewed the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, and Benally is concerned that could deprive more than 2 million Native Americans of coverage they receive under the law. Not all Native Americans, however, agree on the federal government's role in tribal affairs. A group called the Native American Coalition supported Trump during the campaign and is made up of more than two dozen tribal members. They want to limit the federal government's reach in Indian country and say more local control will enhance tribal sovereignty and economic opportunity. Mark Wayne Mullen is the chair of the coalition and a Republican Oklahoma representative from the state's 2nd Congressional District.
There's not going to be any changes to the treaty or to the trust. There's an agreement that's been made with the federal government that this administration isn't going to try to change.
Mullen says some officials and members of Trump's transition team are working on a way to repeal and replace Obamacare while retaining the Indian Health Care Improvement Act. The details of that plan have yet to be worked out. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
Some Indian educators say they're prepared to work with the incoming Trump administration. Bob Tenneker Jr. is the Indian Education Coordinator with Grant Cibola County Schools in New Mexico.
There's still a lot of unknowns, how the president and the administration is going to look at Indian education. And I think that's where Native educators really need to step up to the plate and continue moving forward with a lot of the initiatives that is important to their tribes and to their tribal people and the students.
Educators say they're looking at some potential impacts, but say it's important to continue to move forward no matter who's in office. Tenneker was among Indian educators from across the country gathered for an advisory council government-to-government summit last week in Farmington, New Mexico. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the 6th annual Striking Eagle Basketball Tournament and Education Fair beginning December 28th. Information on the event and services at siabq.org. Support by Northern Arizona University, a university committed to serving Native American students, offering opportunity in every direction, in Flagstaff, at community colleges around the state, and online. Learn more at nau.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, November 21st, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the top of the hour, and joining me in the studio now, he is the KRNN and KTOO program director himself, Mr. Jeff Brown. Welcome to the show that you produce.
Good afternoon, Scott. And good afternoon, Annie.
Nice to have you. And Annie Bartholomew is also on the show. She is an arts, culture, and music producer and also the program director for KXLL. Welcome to the show, Annie.
Thanks, Scott.
Got the whole team in the studio right now.
Arts team, KTOO.
Woohoo! So we have some exciting stuff coming up this weekend. Jeff, let's start with you. The used media sale, when did this, it's from 9 to noon this Saturday here at KTOO. When did it get started?
It started a number of years ago with Toby Tobiasen, one of our former program directors. We had to thin our record library out, and we did that, and we got donations from the community. We left with hundreds and hundreds of LPs, and you think at some point people would have given away all their LPs, but no, they still keep coming. Now we've added CDs and DVDs and VHS tapes to the mix.
Okay, and I've seen they're already starting to arrive here in the halls of KTOO. We're stacking them up, and then usually get them displayed in the large conference room downstairs. Is that right?
That's right. Hundreds and hundreds of CDs. Get them now while they're hot.
And where do all the proceeds go?
To benefit KTOO.
All right. So right now, I'm sure there are some of our listeners out there who maybe have some extra albums, some extra CDs or DVDs. What works well? What sells well at this sale? You've been doing this for a long time.
Well, what doesn't sell well is cassettes and VHS tapes. But people still find great deals on LPs. And CDs. And everything's a dollar.
Okay, everything's a dollar. And what genres tend to sell the best, would you say?
Rock, jazz, and blues.
Okay. So if you're listening right now and you want to support public media by giving us your old media, please do that. We'll be open Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week, basically from 9 to 5. You can bring all of that by KTOO here in the KTOO building at 360 Egan Drive, and open on Friday as well.
And don't turn it off. Don't. You got to get it your next couple of days, maybe just somebody you're taking off. Don't put it off any longer. Take them down here to KTOO because invariably somebody will come by on Monday and say, after the used record sale is over.
Okay.
What's you want to donate?
And it starts at 9 a.m. It goes from 9 to noon. Can people bring it that morning?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. All right. Used media sale, 9 to noon here at KTOO. Then that night, Annie, you had the idea for a pop-up record store. Tell us about it.
Yeah. I grew up here in Juneau and actually went to the used record sale as a teenager. I remember Jeff giving me a really good deal on some of my favorite records from right here in Juneau. But also as a teenager going to other communities like Bellingham and Seattle and just spending all of my money at record shops. And it's been a long time since Juneau had a record store. And I just thought, why not like take that magical experience of like looking through cover art and just finding your favorite artists that you don't know. I mean, every time I go into one of those shops, I'd buy stuff that, you know, maybe you know an artist, but you don't know their body of work and the discoveries that can come from that. So we were looking around town for places we could partner with, and the Alaskan Brewing Company stepped forward and are letting us set up shop upstairs in the Alaskan Brewing Depot that's next to the Glory Hole. And so from 4 to 6 o'clock this Saturday, we're going to turn it into a pop-up record shop. So just 2 hours only, Alaskan Scorcher DJ Taco Todd is going to be spinning a bunch of records there, and it sounds like he's going to bring in some of his personal 45 collection to donate to the cause. I know, I've been collecting records for a long time, and my mom's going to be really happy when I get rid of some of them. And she has a lot stacked up, too. So, you know, when I think about my collection, there's probably like 25 titles that I will never give away. And there's probably another 25 more that I haven't touched since I was a teenager. So if this sounds familiar, you know where to take those records.
It seems like vinyl records are having sort of a renaissance. They've sort of come back into popularity. How would you explain that?
You know, for people my age, I'm 25. iPods came out when I was in middle school. And when that whole Napster thing happened, we lost our connection to music. So if you think about why albums are great, there's all that surface area where they talk about, you know, the liners and like who played on each record. And that's kind of a magical aspect for me, is you're not only like hearing something, you're also getting this visual thing. And then there's a physical part of like taking it out of like the sleeve and putting it on the record player and scratching up your first five records because you don't know any better. And then they're cheaper than a lot of other CDs, like buying something new when you can get a record for like $2 or get them for free or get them from a friend. So I feel like for my generation, the physical aspect of listening to music through headphones, of touching it, you know, we didn't grow up with that. Like I think about my mom and some of her friends. You know, this is just stuff. It's obsolete. But to us, it's like the purest form of music when you think about how the electronic files degraded down. So for all the audiophiles out there, this is...
LPs sound better.
They do. They do sound better.
How about you, Jeff? Do you still spin records at home?
Not at home, but I do, when I come here and do a show, I spin LPs.
Okay. Remind us the hours of the used media sale that's here on Saturday morning.
9 till noon. No early birds. I've been strict on that for a number of years, and that's to be fair to everybody. So no early birds, 9 o'clock until noon. Sometimes we stretch a little bit past noon, but 9 o'clock is the time, official time.
And remind us what sells really well and what people should be bringing down this week.
Classic rock, good stereo, classical, jazz, blues. We got everything.
All right. And Annie, remind us of your times again.
4 to 6 at the Alaskan Brewing Company Depot this Saturday.
Do you have a couple real sweet records?
There's one I've been wanting to skim off the top. It's Ray Charles's country music album that he did. But I'm not going to skim anything off. Everything's going to go. And we'll be marking prices probably starting at like 2, 5, 10, 20. For like the Beatles and Stones records, you know, the ones you would pay that much for down south.
Okay. And it's a great way to clean out your own library and support public media at the same time, right?
Right on.
Anything else either you'd like to add?
Alaskan Scorcher, spinning live.
Right on. We'll see you all on Saturday.
Thanks, Scott.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 21st. It's about 18 minutes past the top of the hour. Joining me on the show now is Sarah Truitt. She's part of the United Way. And Deborah Smith, she is the stage director for King Island Christmas, which opens this weekend. Welcome to the show, Sarah and Deborah. Oh,
thank you.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. Deborah, if people don't know the story of King Island Christmas, can you fill us in?
Give you the short version.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's based on a book that was written by Gene Rogers, who was a dear, dear friend of Ree Munoz, and Ree did the illustrations for the book. But it actually has to do with something that happened on King Island, which is in the middle of the Bering Sea. And Ree and Juan were teachers out there before they came to Juno. And it was at Christmas time, the North Star, which was the BIA supply ship, was supposed to come into King Island with not only all the Christmas presents and food for the rest of the year, but also the village priest, Father Carroll. And it was unable to come in where it normally did. So the decision was made for it to come to the lee of the island, where the weather was not as bad and the ice wasn't as close. And the people of the community had to carry the umiak, which is the very large skin boat, over the mountain down the other side to meet the ship in the lee. And so that's what this whole thing is based on.
And this is the third time you've done this as a musical, is that right?
That's right.
And do you know who adapted it from the book to the musical?
Yes. The libretto is by Deborah Brevoort, who is now currently teaching playwriting, I believe, at NYU. And the music was composed by David Friedman, who has a long list of Hollywood credits, including directing the orchestra like for Aladdin and some of the other Disney movies.
Wow. How many people are in this production?
43.
And not just adults, right?
No, 17 kids and 26 adults.
Very exciting. What have been some challenges for you coordinating that many people as stage director?
I could say like herding cats, but that's probably not a good choice. It is a challenge because kids are kids and they, you know, like to move around to try to get them to concentrate and minimize their movement is a challenge. But they're doing it.
Okay. Yeah. Remind us when it opens.
We open Friday night at 7 o'clock at Aldersgate Church in the Valley. Not Aldersgate. I'm sorry. That's where we did it the last year. It's Faith Lutheran Church.
And where is Faith Lutheran exactly?
That's a good question. If you go out Egan Drive from town, take a left at Mendenhall Loop Road, it's your first right, which is on Del Rey.
Okay.
So it's about a block from the Loop Road.
Who do you think would enjoy this musical?
This musical is really geared for people of all ages. Children under five are free, for instance. And adults, too, because it's a very heartwarming story about a community that has to come together in order to achieve something that they all want.
Okay. I know in the past when you've done this production that you always donate the proceeds to various organizations in town. This time you are donating to United Way. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. Sarah, tell us a little bit about what United Way is all about.
Well, United Way is a convener of nonprofit organizations in the Southeast. We have 35 partners. And when I say partner, I don't just mean they're friends of ours. I mean that they are agencies that are vetted. They can receive funding through the United Way. And we are, I want to say, I don't know, 99% donor-driven. We cannot operate without the generosity of individuals and productions like King Island Christmas. And so we're extremely, extremely grateful to be the recipients of this. We work with our partners to advance education, income stability, and health in the community. And so those partners, they are focused in some form in their mission towards the promotion of education, income stability, and health within our communities.
Can you maybe give us an example of a project you've worked on recently or something that you're doing?
Yeah, geez. You know, there's quite a few things going on right now. One thing that I like to highlight is our Reading Tutors program that we are operating through a grant from CORE Alaska in three elementary schools, tutoring children that are struggling to read at grade level up till third grade. Some other things that we're working on is a community collaboration. The exact title is escaping me at the moment, but collaborating with other groups, not necessarily partner agencies, but partners around the community to address a holistic way of helping children in Juneau be kind of the best that they can be, whether it be, are they facing economic instability or are there food insecurities at home? The food resource group is something that we've worked on in the past. That would be a collection of churches that have food pantries and organizations that are feeding those in need to get the food distributed as efficiently and effectively as possible.
Okay. If somebody wanted to get involved with the United Way or volunteer, do you have a need for that? And if so, how can they do that?
You know, the United Way doesn't do a lot of direct service. So if someone were to say, I want to volunteer for the United Way, I don't have a whole lot for them. But what I do have is getconnected.unitedway.org, which is an online platform where we have our partner agencies, both official and unofficial, just nonprofits in the community, will place on their volunteer needs, and individuals are encouraged to go on there and see what is available. And sometimes, yes, throughout the year, United Way will have a specific thing that they're working on. But that is something that I would direct an interested volunteer to check out first.
Okay. And again, we're here talking about King Island Christmas, and the United Way is the benefactor of the proceeds from the show that opens this Friday. Deborah, for our listeners, can you sort of tell us what the set looks like? What's the scene?
Well, the scene is actually created through the words. It's written as an oratorio, which sounds really formal, but what it is telling the story through the music. And because it's not... The show has been done many, many ways before. This is the way we chose to do it, and it's also the most portable because, as you can tell, we play in different venues. So the setting is in a very isolated village on an island in the middle of the Bering Sea in the winter, and as you can imagine, your children coming up to Christmas, they get excited. Well, all the kids in the village are excited about the fact that the North Star is coming and it's bringing the Father Carol and presents and all kinds of things. So,
as this comes to fruition and opens on Friday, what are you most proud of?
I'm most proud about the fact that we have probably the most diverse cast that we've ever had in the show. And I'm really, really pleased to have so many elements of the community represented in the cast. And they're all working very hard. It's all memorized, so it's not like they're going to be singing with music in front of them. So.
Okay. So it opens this week in the Valley at mm-hmm. which church?
Faith Lutheran, and it runs Saturday at 2, and I'm sorry, at 3, and then Saturday night at 7. And then the following weekend we'll be here in town at the Jack, Thursday, Friday, Saturday evenings at 7, and that's gallery walk weekend, so you can do gallery walk and then just come on over to the show. And then Sunday afternoon, a matinee at 3 at the Jack.
Okay. If somebody wants more information, can they find you online?
They can find the Arts Council online, jahc.org, and that's where the tickets are, and they also have information about it.
Excellent. Thank you both so much for coming onto the show, Deborah Smith, Sarah Truitt. Is there anything else either of you would like to add?
Just, make sure you come out and support this amazing community effort, and thank you so much to those of you that are coming for your donation to United Way, and I'd love to thank everyone that's working on this production, especially. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I've heard there was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing, hallelujah. Proof. You saw her bathing on the roof. Her beauty in the moonlight overthrew you. She tied you to the kitchen chair. She broke your throne and she cut your hair. And from your lips she drew the
persons of Japanese ancestry.
That all men are created equal.
Both alien and non-alien.
Endowed with certain unalienable rights.
Will be evacuated from the following areas by 12 noon.
Dad first said it to me. The nail that sticks out is the one that gets hit. Hold These Truths by Jeannie Sakata is the story of Gordon Hirabayashi in his 60-year fight to stand up to power and discrimination. See it at Perseverance Theater, November 17th through December 4th. Tickets at the Jack, Hearthside Books, ptalaska.org, and 463-TIXS.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 21st. It's about 2 minutes past the bottom of the hour, and joining me in the studio now is Kelly Manning. She's the director of The Canvas. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah. If we have anyone who doesn't know what The Canvas is, tell us about it.
Yeah, The Canvas, we're a community art studio. We're right downtown on Seward Street, and our goal is really to bring the arts to people of all abilities. So we are great opportunity and space for people that want to explore new mediums, come in and learn about art. If people just like to come in and see it, we've got a great gallery. Purchase, great for buying, great art for holiday gifts or other items. Our goal and our mission, we're a program of reach. So our underlying mission for everything that we do is to try to bring individuals with disabilities into the community through the arts, using the arts as the avenue. So everything that we're doing, we're always trying to find ways to help artists with disabilities to participate, be a part of it. We have our artists that we work with have shows in the gallery. We're going to be at Public Market this coming weekend. We have artists, we have their work. We have the artists come and help work with us, be a part of the sales. So our goal really is for the arts to be the mechanism to bring those artists with disabilities into the broader community and be there as equals with their neighbors.
You're an artist yourself, right?
I have a background in the arts for sure. My passion is for poetry, but I also studied a lot of painting when I was in school and definitely come from a family that's very artistic and in our way.
It must be a very fun place to work.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful environment. Just great team at the Canvas. We always attract just wonderful people. So the artists that we work with are a lot of fun. The community members that come in and are regulars in there are always a great group and just a great staff. So, yeah, it's really wonderful environment for sure.
Excellent. What's coming up on your calendar?
Well, as I mentioned, Public Market, we're going to be there all weekend long this coming weekend. So Black Friday and through the weekend. And it's just a great venue, you know, for the arts in general and for makers in Juneau. And so we always have a booth in the main hall. We'll be there all weekend long, and we're going to have gift certificates, so you can get gift certificates for classes. Great opportunity for holiday gifts. We're going to have some new items we're rolling out. We have little beanie hats and pillows and scarves with the artwork from our artists that we work with that experience disabilities. So their artwork printed on different items. We have lunch boxes that are really cute, water bottles, bunch of things like that. So great gift items that are in that range of, you know, $10 to $60. And we'll have original artwork. We'll have information about classes. A lot of things at Public Market that are great opportunities, including a great opportunity to give to the Canvas. We're going to have raffle tickets for 2 round-trip tickets on Alaska Airlines. So we've got that raffle running through December 1st Friday, and so we'll have those tickets available at Public Market.
Exciting. What time do the doors open on Friday?
Friday they open at noon.
Okay.
Yeah. I got that. Yes, Friday they open at noon.
And it's open through Sunday, is that right?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. So Public Market, great way to support the Canvas. Sounds like lots of gift opportunities there. What else is going on?
Yeah, so a couple other things we've got. In keeping in mind with the holidays, we have some holiday classes, so smaller 1 or 2 day workshops. We have one of my personal favorites, the one that I teach every year. We'd always do a gingerbread house class. It's a 1 day. And the thing is, so we charge just $35 to get the house, and as many people that want to work on it can. So that's, you know, regardless. So it's just for the house. But we have so much candy, all of the stuff, and it's a really fun community day. We always have a lot of people. I think last year we had 18 houses and sold out. So we had to have had at least 35 people come through during the day. It's always really fun. That's one that I am always there for. We've got a pop-up holiday cards class coming up with Sherry McDonald. We've got some ornament classes coming up. There's a metals ornaments and a ceramics ornaments. So some really fun holiday classes, great opportunities for families, kids, adults. It's really, they're aimed at whatever age and ability level. And so those are all coming up in the next month. A lot of really great opportunities will be a lot of fun at the Canvas for the holidays. We also have, we've got Angie Lawler is going to be teaching as well as the metal ornaments class. She's also going to be doing an intro to metal smithing and jewelry making class that's going to be starting November 29th. And she used to live here. Her family moved away, and they just recently moved back about a year ago. And she's just an excellent teacher. We're really excited to have her back. So it's a great opportunity for people that either have had her before to come back in and spend some time with her or to come in and get to know her as a teacher. She's just an excellent teacher, has really fun projects that are really engaging.
Okay. Lots of opportunities for classes.
Yeah.
If somebody's listening and they've never taken a class down there, how would you convince them to come in and try one?
Yeah. You know, the best thing, because I think that what happens is that people get daunted. And that's one of the great things about the Canvas is that our classes are for all levels. So we really aim at that beginner level, people that have no experience, to maybe just the beginning level. And then every once in a while we'll have some things that build on that. But for the most part, they're aimed at beginning artists, people that want to try something out. They don't want to go buy all the jewelry making materials or all the ceramic materials or whatever. You know, it's expensive to start a hobby. But it's a great way to come in and try something out. They're usually sort of project-oriented. You have something that you take home in the end. And great community. It's an opportunity to be with other people that are at the same place that you are. And so I think that that's one of the great things about what we're offering is that it's a space where you don't have to know it already. The idea is to come in and learn and to explore it and see if maybe you have a talent you didn't know you had. And it's easy to sign up. People can sign up online. They can call us and sign up over the phone or come in to the gallery. Like I said, we're on Seward Street. And so it's easy to sign up, and our goal really is to make it accessible.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us about what's going on down there?
Yeah, one last thing just to get in. We are doing a call for artists that starts at the beginning of December, and it'll be open for about a month into January. And again, there's information on our website, but we're doing a call for artists for exhibitions in the gallery. So artists that are working and have stuff maybe in process and are thinking somewhere towards the middle to end of next year, because we're looking for June of 2017 through June of 2018 for shows. It can be a group. It can be just an individual. It is kind of a large gallery, but it's a great, it's a beautiful space, lots of light. We've got a lot of lighting, you know, so we can do spotlighting on work. And so it's a really great show exhibition space, and we are doing the call for artists that are looking for a place to show.
So tell us, give us some examples of shows that you've had in the past. You know, a lot of painters I know, but you had George Gress show guitars there once, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, we've done lots of different things. I think that, you know, obviously we have lots of wall space, so it's great for artists that, you know, do two-dimensional work because we have a lot of space where you can hang it. But we also have a lot of different tools and materials that we can build. We have plinths that we can do three-dimensional work. We did have George Gress's guitars, which were just amazing. Definitely a unique show. We also had Mercedes Munoz had done a show of her ceramic work, and she had built these little shelves, and we had them installed all throughout, and it was just an amazing exhibition. We've had just a wide range, really. Three-dimensional. We've had paper mache works. We had one time Kaki Shields and Fumi Matsumoto, that they did a show together, and Kaki had done these folded books that were really amazing, very three-dimensional. So we used the windowsills and the plinths, and then Fumi's prints that she had done on tea bags. She'd made paper out of them and done prints. So those were on the wall. So that was a great collaboration where they really dimensional, filled the space. So wide range of things. So it doesn't have to be just your classic two-dimensional piece that gets hung on the wall.
And at what level should an artist be before they apply for a show in a gallery like yours?
Well, it is a big space, so you definitely want people that that have an idea for how to fill it. So so that's what we're looking for, is things that are going to be presented professionally. When we want something that's going to really set the stage nicely. So we want things that are thought through. And that's kind of what we're looking for. Versus if you kind of have an idea and you're thinking, oh, this could be fun, then maybe wait until you kind of have it more fleshed out, maybe some examples to show. So we have an idea of what it is that you're going to be exhibiting. So part of the exhibit application will involve showing some images of kind of what you have in mind. So you want to be sort of along the road a little ways.
Okay.
Yeah.
If somebody wants more information or to talk to you in person, how can they do that?
Yeah, they can always call us at the Canvas. Our number is 586-1750, and our website is canvasarts.org.
Or they can come and talk to you at the public market Friday, Saturday, or Sunday at Centennial Hall.
Yes, and I will be there most of the time in person, so if it's sort of in the middle of the day, and especially if they want to talk about exhibiting, you know, that's a good time to catch me for sure. Or at the Canvas, we're open, you know, most weekdays during regular business hours until about 7 at night. So we're around and are always happy to talk about what we have going on.
Excellent. Kelly Manning, anything else you want to add?
No, just thanks for having us, and we look forward to seeing people at Public Market.
Great. Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Soaring above the warm oceans of the world, frigate birds cut a distinctive profile. Huge, slim, angular black birds with a 7-foot wingspan and long, scissor-like tails. They blithely chase down smaller birds like boobies to steal their fishy prey, or drop to just above the surface and snatch fish from the water. Perched atop a rocky islet or dead mangrove tree, they look like seagoing vultures. But one thing you'll never see is a frigate bird floating on the ocean. Because their feathers, unlike those of nearly all other seabirds, are not waterproof. Instead, the frigate bird is a master of staying aloft. Tracking devices placed on frigate birds near Madagascar showed that they often stay in the air for a month and a half at a time. They'll soar above the ocean, riding a complex roller coaster of air. Intentionally flying into a cumulus cloud, which has a powerful updraft, they may rise as high as 2.5 miles into the frigid atmosphere. From this high point, a frigate bird can glide more than 35 miles without flapping its wings. Which is how this seabird, that can't get its feathers wet, survives over the open ocean. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
I'm John Sievertson, host of Cross Currents on Monday morning at 8 a.m. I listen to KRNN because it's fun, fresh, and non-commercial. Fun because, well, that's obvious. Fresh because it's new, unscripted, and non-commercial because it's public radio. Please join us.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 21st, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 15 minutes until the top of the hour. And joining me now in the studio is Kaylin Hasland. She is the student intern for Tidal Echoes out at UAS. Great publication. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. If one of our listeners hasn't seen a copy of Tidal Echoes before, how would you describe it?
Tidal Echoes is the Southeast Alaska Literary and Arts Journal that is done through the University of Alaska Southeast. It is done completely through a team of students and faculty advisors. So it reaches out to all of the Southeast region with artwork and writing from everyone, like from Juneau, Ketchikan, Sitka, Hoonah, pretty much all of Southeast.
Okay, so Southeast poetry, fiction.
Yeah, we take poetry, prose, all forms of art, like drawings, paintings, ceramics, photography, pretty much anything that's a piece of creative work.
And, of course, if you take ceramics, for example, you just have beautiful photos.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, everything has to be digital, unfortunately.
There's not a pop-up mug in the middle.
That would be super cool, but unfortunately not.
Okay, yeah, it's an absolutely great publication. How many have you done so far?
This will be actually our 15th anniversary, so our 15th volume.
Okay.
It will also be the 10th anniversary of faculty advisor Professor Emily Wall, so it's a big year.
Yeah. How long have you been the intern?
I am only the intern for this fall.
Okay.
So, but it's been a huge blessing and opportunity for me.
Yeah. How so? I was going to ask you what has impressed you most about this publication since you've been working there?
Just how much we are interacting with the creative community of Southeast and reaching out and sort of just helping broaden what people might think of Southeast Alaska.
Okay. And if somebody wants to participate or publish or be considered for publication, you have a deadline coming up, right?
We are 10 days away from our deadline, actually. December 1st, on December 1st, we will still be open for submissions that day, but up until probably midnight.
Okay. And where do people go to submit?
We are actually all online now, so you will have to go to our submittable page, which is a really easy submittable forum. So you can go to, I'm pretty sure it is, universityofsoutheastalaska.titleechoes.submittable.com. I'm sure. If not, you can always go to our, I have it right here. Yeah, it is universityofalaskasoutheast.submittable.com/submit. So,
and I think if somebody just Googled Tidal Echoes and UAS, you can find the path, right?
You'll have all the guidelines and what it's about all there, and it will actually have a link to the submittable page.
Okay. Is there anything that you are lacking, would you say, this year? Like do you need more poetry, more pictures?
We'd love to see anything, actually. So, like, we're not lacking, but I would say that it would be great to just receive more.
How long should somebody budget to go through that submittable form? What should they have ready to give you? How long does that process take, would you say?
I would say the submission, it doesn't take that long. I would say maybe 10 minutes total. You just have to fill out, like, what category you're under, and you can submit under all three categories, so prose, poetry, and art. You have to give us, like, a bio of yourself, like if you're a student at UAS or not, which is important. You can put if you are like a high school student or if you're basically this will be really short and simple. It's super nice.
And again, it's just really the only thing is that you have to live in Southeast Alaska,
yes.
Right?
That's okay. All we ask is that you are a resident of Southeast Alaska or are a current student at UAS.
Okay. And do you have an event coming up as well?
Yes, actually, tomorrow we'll be having an event at UAS in the Writing Center downstairs, Egan Library, where we'll be doing a workshop for people who are unsure about some of their pieces, if they want it to have looked at by both the Writing Center tutors and also myself and our senior editor, Miranda Clark.
Exciting.
And this will be from 4 to 6
this
p.m.
Is when?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow, Tuesday, from 4 to 6 in the, you say, Writing Center?
Yes.
Okay, and so this is mostly probably for poets and prose writers?
Yes.
Okay. That sounds nice.
Yeah.
And so give us an example of what somebody might bring in and what you might be able to do with them.
Well, if they perhaps, like, bring in a poetry piece, we can look at, like, their grammar mostly and maybe their syntax, but not necessarily the subject matter they're bringing in, because it's completely based on what they want to submit. But if they're concerned about, like, the grammar itself or how it's laid out, because with the journal, we take, like, how you submit your pieces very seriously. So if you're turning in a poem and you are upset with how we've published it, it's because we've published it exactly as you sent it in.
Okay, good to know. What about featured artists this year?
Yeah, our featured artist this year is actually Rico Lanott Whirl, the owner of Trickster Company. He's been super cool, and I'm super excited to work with him on this.
Yeah, he's a great artist. Yeah. And when should we all look for the publication?
Our launch date is actually April 14th next year, so we will have our launch party at the UAS campus in the lecture hall.
And you're the fall intern, but
yes.
I'm sure you'll be there, right?
Yes.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Caitlin Hasland is here talking about Tidal Echoes. The submission deadline for all of you artists out there is December 1st. And all you have to do is go find Tidal Echoes at UAS online and find the submission forms there. Caitlin, is there anything else that you'd like to add about the journal? Or
Not much, but thank you for having me. And a big thank you to everyone who's looking forward to the journal or thinking about submitting to it. It's been a huge pleasure working with this.
And sorry, I guess one last question. Somebody out there is hesitating, maybe. They don't want to send you their artwork. They're afraid. How would you convince them to do that?
I think it's worth a shot, if anything, at least. Like, we're not going to say your work is awful. It might not get in, but it's a huge step forward in sharing your work. And it's always worth it.
Nice words. Thanks a lot, Caitlin.
Thanksgiving weekend, KXLL presents its first ever pop-up record shop, Saturday, November 26th, at the Alaskan Brewing Company in Downtown Depot. Browse our stacks and pick up some vintage vinyl from 4 to 6 p.m. Find the perfect gift or something for yourself. Saturday night at KXLL's pop-up record shop. That's 4 to 6 p.m., Saturday, November 26th, upstairs at the Alaskan Brewing Depot.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow, Ben Brown's going to be your host, and he'll tell us or learn about Perseverance Theater's new production of Hold These Truths. Lauren Anderson from the Treadwell Ice Arena will be here to highlight annual turkey bowling. Davida Ryder is the Juno Artist Gallery featured artist for December. She'll be on the show to tell us about probably public market and other goings-on at the Juno Artist Gallery and Gallery Walk. And Gastineau Principal Brenda Edwards will be here, and she'll tell us about the Gastineau Kindness Crew activities for the month. Let's take a look at the weather forecast. Currently 24 degrees at the Juneau Airport, and the forecast for tonight calls for snow, mainly after midnight, increasing clouds with a low around 26. East winds 10 to 15 miles per hour, and the chance of precipitation is 70% with snow accumulation of less than 1 inch possible. Tuesday, snow before 3 p.m., then scattered rain and snow showers, highs near 35. East wind around 10 miles per hour, and the chance of precipitation before 3 p.m. is 90%. New snow accumulation of less than half an inch possible. And going into Wednesday, the forecast calls for scattered snow showers before noon, then scattered rain showers between noon and 3. Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.